It is the second day of spring, and I decided that it would be perfect. It's a perfect night for a walk and talk podcast because there's no wind. And so that's what we're going to do in podcast 479. We're going to walk and talk through the neighborhood with a full moon overhead on the eve of the eclipse and on the second day of spring 2016 in podcast 479. Well, every year I come out here about this time of the year, and this March has been fabulous. I mean, I can't believe we're almost through March and we're going to be heading into April, and it's going to start getting warm. And when it does, that's when you're going to want to turn your air conditioning on. And my feeling is that we're probably going to be wanting to turn our air conditioning on a little sooner this year than perhaps we did last year. And if you do, you want to make sure that it's functioning properly, and that's why you need to call Ryan Plumbing and Heating, because they will do an AC check. Call them up and get them to come out and do an AC check. It has to be at least 70 degrees for them to check the AC. Here's why. A lot of times that box, things end up in the air conditioning box outside during the winter. There might be various problems. Plus, they can look at all of your other systems and make sure that you sort of have a checkup for that. Here's the number, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, you call 612-927-6488. I'll tell you a secret. Either number works. And it doesn't matter where you are, in the suburbs or in St. Paul or Minneapolis, they've got a plumber near you, and they're great for emergency service. I don't think we're going to have any more, you know, sub-zero pipe-breaking kind of weather, but then we start coming around, we start looking at air conditioning and everything else, and emergency service becomes important. So don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating for emergency service. One more thing, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating for business. They are doing a lot of business work. If you have a business, businesses have different needs, different problems at different times, and Ryan handles lots of business problems, so maybe they can help you out depending on what your issue is. In St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Here's the deal. Metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too, for four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Check them out online, the brand new Ryan Plumbing website at ryanplumbing.com. And thanks, Greg Ryan, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. When I was a kid, I used to go visit my grandpa, and I might stay for a couple of days, and they took he referred to it as a constitutional. He would take a walk every night. And it's funny because he couldn't have been more than 60 or 62 or 63, but he seemed like he was really old. And I don't know why, because I suppose people seemed older than to a 5 or 6 or 7 year old kid. But he and my grandmother would take a walk every night, and we'd talk. And he did most of the talking. I love my grandfather. I don't know that my dad thought too much of him. But I thought he was great. And he talked a lot. You know, you wonder where it comes from. That's part of where it comes from. But the walking and the talking, we would have really great conversations about stuff while we were walking. And he had a cane, and he'd carry his cane. And, you know, Grandma would walk along, and she wouldn't say much, but he'd be yakking away about this, that, or the other thing, and pointing at things with his cane and everything else. So I think there's a sort of a deep connection for me with walking and talking that has to do with back in those days. And of course, I would go down there. It seems like I went down every summer, but I didn't. There were only a couple of summers where I went down to Ohio and would walk with them. But summers always seemed warmer and more lush down there than in Chicago. And I don't know why. I'm not quite sure. I mean, obviously, they lived in central Ohio, so, you know, it was obviously a little bit more south. Maybe it was a little bit more humid. But I would always go down in the summer. I never did any walk and talks with my grandfather in the winter or anything like that, unless we were down in Florida. Then we would, you know, when he lived in Florida, we would do some walk and talks around Christmas. When we go down to visit, they would go out and they would have their constitutional every night. And he was also a night owl. He stayed up really late. In fact, I can remember One time when I was there, and it was during the summer, we didn't get up until 4 p.m. So, and that's what time I got up today was 4 p.m. And so he would stay up really late, and every time I was there, he would watch television until the TV station went off the air, and then we'd sit around and talk, and then they'd go to sleep at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, that was his, you know, natural schedule, I think. But I remember one day we got up at 4 o'clock p.m. I know my grandmother was up earlier, but I didn't wake up till 4 o'clock. And that summer, I think I stayed with them for 2 weeks. And that summer was the summer that I, you know, sort of got on this weird night owl schedule, which worked great for radio, because when you start out in the radio business, you're working the most bizarre odd hours that there could possibly be, because you're usually doing fill-in. So I would do fill-in and work overnights and stuff like that, and it never bothered me in the least. I see people I know at yoga, I run into people who are in the nursing profession, and they have to do that whole thing where they work around the schedule, and they just hate it, because, you know, they'll be on nights for a couple of weeks or a week, and then they'll be on days and, you know, third shift, second shift, first shift, because everybody wants to rotate. I'd be like, I'm not going to rotate. I'm just going to work overnights. That's how I got on the late night schedule. And now I'm again on the late night schedule. And I debated on whether to do a podcast tonight, because I kind of like podcast 478 for various reasons, and I kind of wanted to leave it sit, but I've been kind of lazy this month, and I haven't done a lot of podcasts, and we're getting towards, I just woke up and went, oh my God, we only have about a week and a half left, or 2 weeks left in March, and then suddenly it's going to be April, and I better crank out some podcasts. So, you know, I don't really want to do a podcast tonight. I'd prefer to just take a walk. But then I thought, well, I better do something. You know, I better do something to further the BobDavisPodcast.com besides sitting around watching The Walking Dead and then thinking, there's nothing. I've watched everything. I can't watch anymore of anything. So I have to wait for the shows to come up. I have to wait for The Affair to come on to HBO or whatever it is, Showtime, and I have to wait for Vinyl. And I thought, well, I'll buy a movie on iTunes. And that's when I said, you know, just hold on a second here. You need to do some work. So that's when I decided I would take a walk and do a walk and talk podcast. And that is what I am doing right now as we speak. So, in podcast 478, I said that I would at some point, you know, share coping skills for how to deal with the onslaught of media persuasion. And I'm going to start, I think, by talking about what I used to do when I first started doing talk radio. And I think I've talked about this a couple times, but for people who don't know me, I'm going to lay it out. I decided, when I started doing talk radio, it was just on the heels of the first iteration of the internet. And almost everyone remembers, if they were alive at that time, that almost everyone got one of those AOL discs in the mail. It just came to your house, and you loaded up the app. It was an app, loaded up onto your PC, and you plugged it into a dial-up 58K modem, and it would, you know, you could use it. It would do all the stuff, and it would call the internet, and it would connect you with a thing called a browser through AOL. It was the, you know, it was either Netscape or AOL, right? And I think I had Netscape. I must have bought it somewhere. And I had Netscape. And first I got AOL, and then somebody told me about Netscape, and I bought Netscape. And so that was the very beginning of the ability to scan or look for news on the internet. And there weren't too many options. I mean, Yahoo News was the biggest option. And of course, the Drudge Report was there, because it started in 2000. But that's how I started. So when I started doing talk radio, and I just, oh wow, there's so much to this piece, and I really shouldn't go on, but I'm going to. So what I was doing when I was consulting, one of the things that I did was I did morning show prep. and I would go through the evening's news. And I'd find, you know, the top stories, and I would write little headlines. And oddly enough, it was very much like the Blaze. You know, I didn't have links, but I did. I think I did have links, but that went up on this website called All Access, and I did that for 6 months or so. And then somebody said, "Why don't you do talk radio?" And so I said, "Well, I'll go up to Minneapolis for a week." And they asked me to come up and do talk radio at KSTP, and I said, "Okay." You know, because I really thought at a certain point in my life I'd go back on the air, because this is coming on the heels of being in music radio and doing management and consulting and everything else. And so I came up here and to Minneapolis and St. Paul, and the first night I was like, this is what I want to do. This is really fun, and I don't have to worry. I can leave it behind and forget about it. So it didn't take very long for me to say, you know, because I loved newspapers. So I would buy every single, I would go to Lund's. And at that time, they had the Financial Times, they had the Wall Street Journal, they had Investor's Business Daily, they had the New York Times, they had, you could get a bunch of newspapers. And I would buy like 11 newspapers every day. And I would get up in the morning and I would go to the Uptown Diner, which at that time I think it started, and it was on where the Apple Store is, pretty much where the Apple Store is now. And then they moved up on Hennepin, and I would go there every day, and I would sit there and eat breakfast and take a pair of scissors and a big pair of shears, and I would go through and I would cut out all the articles that I was interested in, and I would make a big pile of clippings. And then I would take the clippings later, and I would read them, and then I would, at dinner, I would sort through the clippings, and then I would take those clippings, and I'd go in, and I would do the show, and I would sit there and look at the clippings and talk about the stories, and I underlined stuff that I was interested in. I don't know how, I did that, but I did it for like 4-5 years. That's what I did until a talk radio consultant by the name of John Minnelli, who programmed WABC in New York at one point, very smart guy, said, "You're overprepped. You know, you're talking about things, and I don't know that I agree with this, but you have so much detail, you'll never be able to get it on the radio." And this was the beginning of this whole, you have to know what you're talking about, and you have to know why you're talking about it, and blah, 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 blah. Which is true, I guess. And that's when I started to go online, because computers got faster and everything else. So that's the genesis of what I used to do. I used to read 8 to 11 newspapers cover to cover a day. And I actually think I might go back to that. And I'll tell you why. There is the only reason I don't is because when you look at stuff online, you have way more many sources than you would with 11 newspapers, you know, and you can print selected articles and then read them. Now, I always print and read, because there is some kind of a creative thing that happens from reading, you know, in an actual piece of paper and using a pen to annotate, you know, in the margins and write down thoughts. That's really important. And that's what I did when I finally ended up at News Talk. And then, of course, later on at KSTP, I did that. But that's the first thing. Springtime is upon us. I mentioned this earlier. And springtime, in addition to many things, usually warmer weather brings people out looking for houses. They start to think, if you're in the market for a house, you start to think, well, maybe it's time that we go out and look at some houses, because it's a little easier to get around. And one of the fastest growing sections of Minneapolis and St. Paul is the North Metro. And when it comes to real estate, these days in the North Metro, you want to talk to Eric and Aram Lucero. Why? Because the deal is, is if you're in the market to sell, if you're in the market to buy, you need to have a real estate professional that really understands the market on a house-by-house basis. Eric and Aram really talked to me about understanding what happened and what is happening with each individual house. You know, we've had house flipping, we have had an up-and-down market, and you need to understand what is going on with each house. And so I've been introducing prideofhomes.com to listeners and subscribers to the Bob Davis podcast. Prideofhomes.com is a licensed real estate agent and real estate investor with expertise to share with you. Even in my own neighborhood, when I walk through, I see a house for sale and I think, I wonder what the story on that place is. This is why you have to have experienced real estate professionals, because they can tell you about the history of that particular house. Take a moment, reach out to talk to Eric and Aram Lucero, husband and wife team with Luke Team Real Estate and prideofhomes.com. They're in the North and Northwest Metro. So if you're looking at Maple Grove and Plymouth and Rogers and Dayton, Albertville, St. Michael, Elk River, Champlin, anywhere along the North Metro 94 corridor, they can help you out for real estate expertise. Eric and Aram Lucero. Here's the number, 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100. Buying or selling, you got to have a real estate professional with knowledge of the market. And they are a husband and wife team, which means Eric and Aram Lucero can respond quickly. And when you combine that with really famous customer service at Luke Team Real Estate, you're good to go. I've had at least one subscriber to the podcast that bought a house with Eric and Aram, and two people that I know rave about the customer service at Luke Team Real Estate. Once again, for real estate expertise, Eric and Aram Lucero and Luke Team Real Estate, prideofhomes.com, 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100, or click on the banner there at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page with a picture of Eric and Aram, and it will take you to prideofhomes.com. And thank you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. That I would say is an antidote to what is going on is to actually print up all those things that you see online and sit and read them, because you're going to get a perspective of what they really are when you actually start to read the stories. Plus, you'll see that there's an awful lot of repetition of story that someone got from somewhere else and rewrote, and you can tell after a little while. And the other thing is that you begin to see the storylines, and you begin to see how stories percolate, and you can start to read between the lines. It takes a long time. This is what I was talking about when I was talking about discernment. So very few people have the time to do that. But, I mean, it was my job, and that's what I did. And I think it was unique, because I don't think anybody else did that. You know, and what happens is you end up knowing more than anyone else, because you're reading constantly. You're reading through all those stories. For what I'm doing now, I don't think I need to do that. So I don't do that as much anymore. So what I do now is I just collect stories and put them in what's called in iOS or Mac, in the Mac world, they have a thing, Safari has a reader, and you can put things in the reader, and then you can read them or print them later, whatever you want to do. So I'll go through, and every day, I do my usual scan through several aggregator websites and find stories that are interesting to me, pull them up and save them. And then sometimes I print them and sometimes I don't. So I would have to say I'm not as well informed as I used to be, but I still have the discernment because I spent 10 years reading 11 newspapers a day, and then through the internet, even more. So I still have a certain level of discernment. So anyway, that's one of the ways that you get discernment. The other thing is you have to read books. And I go back and forth between reading history books and reference books. Like right now I'm reading the CIA World Fact Book. And I'm reading that because I just want to kind of have a light survey of every country in the world. And you don't retain everything, but I'm up to Mexico. And so actually I'm up now into the Marianas Islands or something like that. So I'm on the M's. And it's taken a long time, but that's what I'm, you know, because you can only read a couple of those things and you fall asleep. So, but it's kind of cool because every day you read about three or four countries and then you sort of just retain that information. It's taking me a long time to finish this book, but I will. And then I go back and forth between reading that and then reading. And here's the suggestion I would give. People say, well, what would you read? And I just simply say, First of all, I don't read, and I'm not saying you have to do this. I'm just saying I don't believe that reading these popular political books is worth it, you know? And I'll tell you why I say this. Because if you go to a garage sale Or if you go to an antique store, or so-called antique store, basically what we used to call junk shops, they're all over the place. Hopkins has a bunch of them. And St. Paul has a bunch of them. And you go in there, and they always have a place in the back where they keep magazines and old books and crap that people get at garage sales. And it's almost, there's almost always three or four books from Rush Limbaugh, you know, a couple of Glenn Beck books. You'll see Al Franken's book. Rush Limbaugh's a big fat idiot. They will be there. And usually it's a dumping ground for those books that are so supposedly popular in the given moment. They're very disposable. And they end up in these junk shops. So if you want to read them, you know, fine. But the thing is, I'm not so sure. And when I was doing talk radio, you know, they used to send us those books all the time and I'd read them, and, you know, because we were going to interview somebody. And they all end up being dropped off at the used bookstore because I don't want them. And they don't want them either. But I just drop them off in the middle of the night, so they have to take them. But that's what ends up happening. There's a ton of those kinds of books. It's like self-help books. They're really disposable. You know, every year, hundreds of self-help books are written, and they're promoted, and people buy them, and they say, did you read this book about, you know, butterflies are free, and it's really amazing. And then they end up in these junk shops, or they end up in the used bookstore, where they're eventually just, I don't know what they do with them. They just recycle them or something. So I don't read those books. What I do, and what I think people should do, is if you're interested in something, if you're interested in sports, you should go find a really good book about sports and read what you're interested in, and just keep reading about what you're interested in, and it doesn't matter what it is, and then let that lead you on a little journey, as opposed to, you know, having, I see on Facebook that people are always saying, you know, here's a list of books that you should read. These are the six books you have to read before you die. You know, you'll see that. The 10 books that you must read before you're 40 or whatever. And most of the time it's like, eh. Some of them, you know, usually I'll look at those and I'll see the 10 books that you have to read before you're 40, and I'll have read four or five of them, you know? Anyway, so my recommendation, the chief thing, there's two things to do in coping, and it all involves one major thing, and that is reading. The more you read, the more relaxed you're going to be, and the better you're going to understand things. Now, as far as books, my son gave me a book for Christmas, which I left on the shelf for a long time and never read, and it's a gem. And that is something called Controlling the State by Scott Gordon, who is a Johns Hopkins university professor. And if you have read a lot of books about history and government, you're going to find that this book will change a lot of your views, and it will ameliorate a lot of your intensity, a lot of your partisan intensity. A word to the wise, a lot of books about the foundation of the American Republic these days are either written from, almost all of them are written from a political perspective, either, you know, a left of center perspective, for lack of a better term, or a right of center perspective, where there's an agenda by the person that wrote the book. Now, everybody who writes a book has an agenda, but I don't like reading history books that are written like these pulp, you know, books by Dinesh D'Souza or someone like that. Not that I have a problem with Dinesh D'Souza. I'm just saying I don't read those books because they're not textbooks. They're not history books. Now, all history books are written with a perspective, but I think, you know, academic historians are easier and better to read than somebody who's got an agenda. So that's a word to the wise. That's the whole thing about this Scott Gordon book, because he doesn't really castigate anyone, but he makes it clear. He'll tell you what his feelings are about something, and he makes it clear. It's basically a history of participatory government. That's one of the good books that I read that I just stumbled across. So I highly recommend Controlling the State by Scott Gordon if you can find it. But reading is a great way to cope with what's going on. And if you didn't listen to the previous podcast, podcast 478, what I was talking about was the intensity of all of these modern media sources. Twitter is just, oh, Twitter is, you know, it's just like tapping into mainline brainwave of some crazy person, which is kind of like what this podcast is like, but it's hopefully a little bit more relaxed. That's just crazy. Every morning I look at that and I'm just like, you know, I don't know if I can even take this. If you spend any time when I was traveling, I spent a lot of time, dogs. That's why my grandfather carried a cane, by the way, was to stop the dogs, because it was this, I don't know what kind of cane it was, really hard wood, and he would whack them on the top of the head if they ran up and tried to bite him or bite grandma or me. You know, what's happening is that we're just getting, you know, we're submerged in all of these persuasive messages. Everybody's trying to persuade you to a particular point of view. You're not getting, and I'm going to repeat this because I think this is really important, you're not getting a list of facts that describe an event that occurred. You know, there was an accident on the highway, a list of facts of the who, what, where, why, when, and how of this particular thing that happened, this house fire or this car accident or this political thing. You're getting persuasive journalism, and everything is written. I noticed this tonight reading about Donald Trump at AIPAC and Hillary Clinton at AIPAC and Donald Trump and the deals that he made in New York. If you're writing for the Daily Beast or if you're writing for, you know, the New York Times, everything is written with this snarky attitude. And, you know, I would imagine that the editors of those publications call it panache, but it's just snarkiness. It's nasty. It's a nasty tone. You know, well, Donald Trump brought in the plutocrats to New York City with his development, and it changed everything. And it's like, you know, 30 years ago they were bitching and moaning about the wasps in New York, and now suddenly they're upset because Donald Trump has built these buildings. And it's just snarky. And is it news? I mean, I suppose we want to know about Donald Trump's, you know, early years, but as I recall, I lived in New York during the time that he was doing that stuff, and I recall people being really excited about what he was doing and excited about some of the things that he was talking about. Again, I'm not supporting Trump. I'm just saying it's a snarkiness. It's not a recitation of facts. Usually they aren't even facts. It's just the only fact is that somebody spoke at an event. And then it's a series of recitations of snarky opinions about what was said and what people's reaction to it was. And as I've said 100 times, what passes for reporting is, let me run up to this person with my notepad and ask them some questions, and I'll write down what they said, and I'll find out. Susan Jones is a 40-year-old teacher from, you know, Aqueduct, New York, and she feels that Donald Trump is a fine example of America. And here's, you know, and then you get into the snark. You know, Susan, who is wearing a homespun, you know, knit sweater and like that. And I'm making that up, but I'm just saying that's the kind of stuff you get that goes for reporting. So that's the kind of world we're living in. So I want to close this podcast and sort of end this walk and talk with the other thing that you have to do, and that is, You have to unplug from this every now and then. In fact, I've found that you have to unplug from it regularly because it'll blow your mind. It will make you lose faith in humanity. And, you know, I renew my faith in humanity every time I go out and travel the country in the mobile podcast command unit. You know, every time I go out and I think about things that I'm going to see, and then I see things, and my faith is renewed by watching people live their lives, not necessarily seeing them at a political event or talking to them about politics, but watching people in their day-to-day pursuits. That renews my faith because I see people doing things that I've done my whole life, and I'm sure that you would see the same thing. So, you know, there's the world that the media and this persuasion machine that's constantly pushing you to think a certain way for whatever reason, usually to make money, you know, usually to get clicks and views. This is the this is what drives these media outlets, as I said in the previous podcast, not a driving desire to be able to recite to you the facts so that you're aware of the facts surrounding something, to the point where almost nothing is believable. And I'll give you an example. If you spend any time watching videos on YouTube about the end of the world or the Illuminati or the conspiracists or any of that stuff, you know, you're going to realize that there's very little difference between that stuff, which is also designed to persuade you to believe this, that, or the other thing, and the so-called mainline news services, which use snark and quote-unquote panache or attitudinal writing with attitude to convince people of a certain point of view or a certain attitude about things. And I would have to say that the only way that you can deal with that is you have to turn it off every now and then. You just have to turn it off because it will make you crazy. It will it'll make it very difficult for you to understand yourself. It'll make it really hard for you to understand the big picture. So you have to turn it off every now and then, and you have to do something else. You have to walk, you have to fish, you have to get out in nature, you have to do yoga, you have to practice some kind of martial art, you have to do something that teaches you to breathe and teaches you to break away from this, you know, world that has been created by these people to persuade us of a certain perspective. I ran into somebody again today that said the same thing to me, and that is, what is going on? This is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life, this news cycle, this election. And we are, we're just inundated with political news coverage, and it's everywhere. It's just everywhere you go, this political news coverage, and they're it's overwhelming. There's got to be other things happening in the world, but it's all political. It's all, you know, Obama goes to Cuba, or it's, you know, Donald Trump goes and speaks to the people at AIPAC, and, you know, these are tiny constituencies compared to the United States. Whether or not we normalize relations with Cuba is inconsequential to the future of this country, one way or the other. I wouldn't call it a waste of time one way or the other, but it's not an issue. Israel is a tiny country compared to the United States, and yet you would think it was Germany, you know, or it was France, or it was Great Britain, in the way that people kowtow and run to New York and are so concerned about creating, you know, they always save their deep, complicated, and highly intellectual, quote-unquote, foreign policy speeches for AIPAC, because, it's so deeply important, and yet the Middle East, you know, and just to talk about foreign policy for a second, you know, is the Middle East our number one problem, you know, or the rise of China, you know, or the rise of Russia? You know, how do you put that in perspective? But because the media won't put it in perspective for you. You may have a different idea about that, but I hope that your idea about that is based on reading history and reading foreign policy and sociology, and not based on what somebody said on Fox News. See what I'm saying? And so that's why. And I have found the longer you turn it off, this is really interesting. The longer you turn it off, especially if you've had a long history of reading, and if you continue to read, the longer you turn it off, the more prescient your analysis will be. The less of this crap that we watch, the better we will be able to analyze what is going on in the world. Because you learn that most of what is being pushed out into the media river day after day after day is not fact. So without facts and logic, there's nothing for you to act on. But you're being bidden to act. You're being bidden to take some action, to have some thought, to have some reaction to everything that is said. And so it's really hard not to react to something by being angry or being sad or being happy or being gleeful that something bad happened to somebody that you didn't like. you know, or whatever, especially in a political year like this one. But when you turn it off, you start to think about what's really important to you and what's going on in your head and what's going on in your mind. And when you do some kind of a martial art, or you do yoga, or you do, you know, CrossFit, or you do some kind of exercise, even if it's just walking, you know, a lot, you start to breathe and you start to go, oh, well, you know what? Does that really matter? Is it going to make a huge difference in my life today if Donald Trump spoke at AIPAC or not, and what he said, or what Hillary Clinton said, or whether Bill Clinton said, you know, castigated Obama for the past 8 years, which, by the way, he wasn't talking about Obama. It's clear. I watched that tape and he was talking about the Congress and the fight between Obama and Congress. And he was saying that she will be someone who reaches across the aisle. But that's not how the media played what he said. So you see what I'm saying? Everything is presented to you not as fact, but as opinion. But it's opinion presented as fact. So the longer you turn it off, the more you start to get some perspective on what's important and what isn't. And that stuff is not important. So I did these two podcasts to make people understand what's actually happening and what they are actually doing to you and to me and to us. They are manipulating us, and they are manipulating our emotions. And in so doing, they're pushing toward a certain result. Now, of course, one of the other antidotes for all of this crazy media stuff is travel. And I can't say enough about travel. And I don't mean going on vacation so much as I mean just traveling with just a loose plan in mind. And if you've listened to my travel podcast, I talk a lot about that and about the peace that comes from just kind of traveling along and seeing what's going on out there in the country, because there's a lot of stuff. And I used to go in my Ford Crown Vic from exgovernmentcars.com. I would travel around the country in that thing, and I'd have to put the seat down at truck stops. And it was really difficult. But I would take my portable recorder, and I would take my portable computer, and I would, you know, work in the car or at some truck stop. And I was telling Ed about this, and I was saying I wanted to get a van so I could at least lay down in the back and sleep instead of sleeping in the seat at a truck stop in the car. And he said, "We're going to get you an ambulance." And that's the genesis of Mobile Podcast Command. And it came from exgovernmentcars.com. Now, they have just opened something they call the Mega Truck Center up in Forest Lake, Minnesota, because there's a lot of government agencies that have been using these big trucks lately. And so they've got Fords, Chevys, Dodges, Toyotas, and more. And they still have the great ex-government cars, the Crown Vics, the Chargers, the new Ford Police sedans, and so forth. And I just talked to somebody today that was up there, and they said that they had a great selection of all these different former state Minnesota State Police cars and trucks and everything else. So if you're looking for a work truck, an SUV, a van, whatever, there's a lot of great things about ex-government cars. First of all, they have fast financing for all credit levels at exgovernmentcars.com, and you have a 3-day peace of mind guarantee, which means you buy with confidence. You can just take it back if there's a problem, but they're always great after the sale. They have helped me immensely. Ex-government cars also takes trades, and since this is tax time, if you take your tax refund into the folks at ex-government cars, they will hook you up, and they can count that as your down payment. So when you're out there, talk to them about that. Exgovernmentcars.com, now open in Forest Lake at 356 19th Street, 763-777-8782, or check them out online at exgovernmentcars.com. Let me get out the bullhorn and wake up the neighbors. Exgovernmentcars.com. I always mention pilots, and I mention Alpha Systems in relation to this, because Alpha Systems makes something called the Revolutionary Angle of Attack Indicator. The bottom line is, if you want to get there, yeah, you want to get there, but you want to get there safely. And takeoffs and landings are critical with pilots. And the thing about Alpha Systems AOA, as the geese fly back into the neighborhood, AOA saves lives, because you have a visual indicator of what your angle of attack is, and it's so important. Here's how to find out more about it. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's Revolutionary Angle of Attack Indicator, which is now FAA approved, at the BobDavisPodcast.com. And thanks, Alpha, for sponsoring the digital side of the Bob Davis Podcasts. Also want to quickly thank the people who've donated to the Bob Davis Podcast's mobile podcast command unit, which you see the picture right there on the front page of the BobDavisPodcast.com. If you click on that big yellow donate button, you can donate. And I don't care if you donate a dollar or $100 or whatever it is that you do. There's a number of people, Ed Nass, John, I'm not going to say your last name because you don't want me to, but there's a lot of people who've donated, and it really made it. Not only did it help me on the road because it helped me buy diesel fuel and things like that, and Komodo Dragon coffee and beef jerky and everything, which is true. I'm not making that up. That's what I ate on the road. I lost 10 pounds. I can't get enough to eat right now. But it made me feel great because it made me realize that there's people out there who support what I do. Now, I'm looking for a sponsor for the Bob Davis Podcast Command mobile unit, and I got a great package. If you have a business and you're interested in sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast mobile podcast command unit, especially as we head into the intense part of the election year, I want to go out and actually see what's going on and cover what is going on, talk to me about it, because I have a great package if you want to sponsor the mobile podcast command, and that will also be something that I really appreciate. So thanks again for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts. Thanks for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for listening to the radio show, which is brand new, and it's on AM 1280 The Patriot at 5 p.m. on Saturdays in Minneapolis and St. Paul. We'll be getting new affiliates, and when I do get them, I'll announce them. And thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, and especially Instagram, which I love because there's no snark. And thanks for your donations again at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 479.
Early this morning, when you knocked upon my door, early this morning, he knocked upon my door. And I said, "Hello, Satan, I believe it's time to go." Me and the devil was walking side by side.